So it's great to be here, and thanks to Gayfree and Shogun for putting together what looks like a fantastic program. So the work that I'm going to talk about, my main collaborators are listed here, and the body of work that I'll talk about really started with a collaboration with Ashwin Vishwanath a year back. And it's particularly appropriate, and very happy to be speaking about that work here, because a good part of the thinking that went into our work was done right out here at Perimeter. We're both visiting last summer. So it's great to come back and tell you about what we found. So let me also highlight some of the younger people here who you may not know. So Chung Wong is a graduate student at MIT who's it's been very stimulating for me to interact with him. I've learned a lot from him. Chen Kei Zhu is here. Michael Levin is probably here, or rather will be here, certainly by this afternoon. Nicola Renaud did some very nice exact diagonalization work that I'll briefly mention. He's not here. Brian Swingle is sitting somewhere, and he's speaking later today. Jay Saw is a postdoc at Harvard, and Drew Porter is a student at MIT. We'll mostly talk about the work that I did with these three people, and Brian will talk about things that he's been doing later today. Okay, so let's start with thinking about phases of quantum matter arranged in some order of what one may call unconventionality or non-triviality. So how do we arrange phases of matter in terms of unconventionality? Right? So one point of view is to ask about the entanglement of the ground state wave function. So familiar phases of matter, like band insulators and other familiar phases, short-range entangled, the ground state wave function, the prototypical ground state wave function does not have entanglement between two distinct, two well-separated regions of, the degrees of freedom in two well-separated regions of space. Further along this line, we should put gap topological ordered phases like the fractional quantum Hall effect, where the ground state wave function is some global structure that's captured by the trace long range entangled. Even further along the way, we should put gapless phases, critical points, like Fermi liquids or non-Fermi liquids. So Fermi liquids, I put it out there. So it's a very unconventional phase, though it's very familiar. And I like to tell my string theory friends that it's really a theory from the 21st century that was accidentally understood in the 20th century. So topological insulators, the obsession of our field in recent times, are almost conventional. They're short-range entangled, but they're a bit on the, they're marching towards unconventional things, right? And this talk will almost entirely be about these almost conventional phases. But the point of view that I'd like to stress towards the end of the talk is that by studying these almost conventional phases, it turns out that we actually end up learning a great deal about these highly exotic phases. I should probably do this. Okay. So there's the standard pictures everyone shows about topological insulators. So the usual characterization of a topological insulator is that it has non-trivial surface states with gapless excitations that are protected by some symmetry. So it's a more general point of view that is often useful. It is to say that if you have a d-dimensional topological insulator, the surface is a d-1 dimensional field theory, and the effective field theory of the surface realizes symmetry in a manner that's forbidden in an acceptable theory in strict d-1 space-time dimension. And this is certainly true, for instance, for the famous 3D Fouquet-Mellet topological insulator. And one general question that one may pose in this field is to think about whether there are other non-trivial examples of such field theories. So one of the things that we would like to understand is the interplay of strong correlation and topological insulation. So can interaction-dominated phases, can they be in topological insulating phases? So this requires us to move away from the crutch of free fermions and band topology that informs most of the current discussion of topological insulators. So I'm going to talk about bosons in this talk, only about bosons. So why bosons, right? So for bosons, the free limit is totally trivial, right? So free bosons can't do anything interesting, other than Bose condensed. So to talk about boson insulators, we necessarily must deal with an interacting theory. So we necessarily have to give up the crutch of non-interacting models, right? We need to develop different crutches. Besides this natural realization of a strongly correlated boson system in solid state physics, it's every quantum spin system. So there's an interesting question that one can ask about phases of quantum magnetism, right? So is there a spin analog of a topological insulator, which I'll call a topological paramagnet? So this should be distinguished in a way that'll make a bit more precise from the more familiar but more exotic quantum spin liquid. So quantum spin liquid has fractionalization, topological order, perhaps gapless excitations, blah, blah, blah. But a topological paramagnet, much like the topological insulator itself, should have nothing dramatic going on in the bulk. And of course, we always whisper the words cold atoms. So I'll whisper them too, or at least, the best I can whisper. And correlated bosons are, another reason to study them is that we know in studies of strong correlation physics that with bosons, we can make a lot more progress than with fermions, usually. The Bose-Hubbard model is completely understood, right, in any dimension, unlike the fermion-Hubbard model. So might as well start with bosons rather than immediately trying to tackle fermions. Okay, so this is the question that one wants to study and understand. Can bosons be in a topological insulator state with the following properties? No topological order, no fractionalized excitations in the bulk, and a bulk gap. But we nevertheless want the system to have non-trivial surface states that are protected by global internal symmetries. So I put in the requirement of internal symmetry to make sure that the state is robust to disorder. Right? So the symmetry should, I don't want it to be protected by lattice translation or lattice rotation, things of that sort. Okay, so this is the question. It's actually an old answer to this question due to Duncan Haldane. So the Haldane spin chain in one dimension has nothing in the bulk. It has things in the bulk, but it has no fractionalized excitations in the bulk. It has a bulk gap. It's a unique ground state if you put it on a ring. But nevertheless, we know that the dangling spin half moments at the edge if the chain is open. So these edge states are protected by symmetry. So this is an example of a symmetry protected topological paramagnet. And in fact, I would claim, people usually say that topological insulators begins with Haldane's honeycomb model. It actually begins with Haldane's spin chain. Right? People are setting the wrong Haldane all the time. All right. So 1D, we know that Haldane chains exist. What about D bigger than 1? So there's some nice progress, dramatic progress from a number of people in the room. Chia Chen is probably here. Jing Cheng may be here. Shogun. So based on very general and very abstract classifications of short-range entangled phases, the buzzword here is cohomology. I'll confess that after having worked in this field for 1 year, I still don't know what cohomology means, but I'll whisper that too anyway. So this question was answered substantially through this classification. And allegedly, there's also a famous unpublished classification by Kitaev, which will appear at some point in the distant future. And finally, for ordinary human beings, there's a classification through Chern-Simons theory by Yang-Ming Liu and Ashwin Vishwanath, which just an ordinary graduate school education one can understand. But it works in D equals 2, and for the with global abelian symmetries. So some restrictions, but helps you get into the field. So let me give you a simple two-dimensional example that's gotten a lot of attention in the last 1 year. This really a homework problem in traditional quantum Hall physics. So again, a good graduate school education is all you need to solve this problem. So let's ask the question, is there an integer quantum Hall effect for bosons, namely a state with no bulk topological order or fractionalization, but nevertheless has a quantized Hall conductivity? And it turns out that the answer is yes. So I'm just going to give the answers because this is already a year old. And in this field, a year is like eternity. Right? So there is a state which has an electrical hole connectivity of 2, sigma xy is 2. Their structure looks like this. As counterpropagating edge state, there's a charge mode that goes upstream and a neutral mode that goes downstream. So the existence, so it's a non-chiral state, so therefore the thermal hall conductivity is zero. And this, in fact, a nice realization of this state, if you take a system of 2-component bosons, such that each component is at nu equals 1 in a magnetic field at nu equals 1, then that system is a suitable platform for realizing this boson integer quantum Hall state. So a number of us have worked on this, and the statement about the Hall connectivity being 2 came out of Ashwin and Yan-Ming Liu's classification. Now, in the last 1 week, there have been 3 separate papers studying this system, 2-component bosons at filling factor 2, studying the system with just delta function repulsion, right? Both between same species and between opposite species, and through exact diagonalization, my own involvement is through this collaboration with Nicola and Yeo, and the evidence seems quite strong that with delta function repulsion, there's a unique ground state on a torus, and that it indeed is in this boson integer quantum Hall state. There's a competing state at the same filling, which is a more exotic non-abelian state, but you know, as always, the simpler state wins over the more exotic state. Okay. So things look good for this 2D example. We understand it quite well by now. So let me just comment on some of its properties. So the state has sigma xy of 2 and kappa xy of 0. And clearly, we can construct states with sigma xy 2n and kappa xy 0 by taking copies. But there's an important result that comes out of this body of work, that for bosons, the integer quantum Hall effect necessarily has even sigma xy. Okay. So let me give you a simple argument for why this is true. Let's imagine that we thread in 2 pi flux into the system, Laughlin. So this will pick up a charge of sigma xy. And if you ask about the exchange statistics of the resulting particle, it has the braiding statistics, test statistics pi times sigma xy. And the requirement that there's no topological order or anything dramatic going on in the bulk means that we only admit boson excitations in the bulk. And therefore, this guy had necessarily have both statistics. And so sigma xy must be even. Okay? So it turns out this is important to understand for some of the 3D work that I'll talk about. So let me make another comment, which I'll just throw it out as a comment. It turns out that this class of states has kappa xy equals 0. They're non-chiral. You can ask, are there chiral boson states that are still integer quantum Hall-like, meaning they don't have a bulk topological order? And it turns out that the answer is yes. So there are boson states with non-zero kappa xy. And these exist even in the absence of any symmetry, just like the fermion integer quantum Hall state. But a requirement is that kappa xy be a multiple of 8. And this and the corresponding edge theory is a CFT, which is known as the E8 CFT, as an E8 symmetry. And Brian is going to talk more about that later today. So this state is apparently well known in the literature, or at least in the minds of human beings. People tell me that lots of people that I talk to tell me when they first knew about this state, but I don't know where there are papers, but Kitaya gives it 2 lines in this 2006 paper, and it's discussed in more detail in the Liu Vishwanath paper. Okay, so that's the introduction. So now let me turn to the main topic, three-dimensional time reversal symmetric topological insulators of bosons. The preview of coming attractions, these 3D boson topological insulators will have a quantized magnetoelectric effect, just like their fermionic counterparts. But the axion angle will turn out to be 2 pi, or in some cases, even 0. Right? So another feature is that the surface is most conveniently described in terms of a dual vortex picture with an exotic vortex. In some cases, fermion. In some other cases, other exotic vortices. I'm still not quite done with the introduction because I still had to review the 3D topological insulators. This is the disadvantage of being the first speaker. So the free fermion topological insulators are characterized by the presence or absence of non-trivial surface states And there is an interesting electromagnetic response. And you know, there's famous odd number of Dirac-Kohns. And the main feature is that a trivial gap or localized insulator is not possible at the surface so long as all the symmetries are preserved. So let me talk briefly about the electromagnetic response. So from a practical point of view, the main story here is that there's a surface quantum Hall effect. If we gap out the surface by applying a magnetic field or by depositing a ferromagnet on the surface, then the surface is a Hall conductance, which is shifted from an integer by half. And if you, when you deposit a ferromagnet, if you make a domain wall in the ferromagnet, then this domain wall between opposite T-breaking regions has a chiral edge mode, and this is the same edge mode as the edge of the 2D integer quantum Hall effect of fermions. Right? There's a single chiral fermion that's going that way. So the surface quantum Hall effect can be you know, encapsulated mathematically in a nice way, which is due to Shou-Liang Chi and collaborators, and further clarified by Sin Moore and Vanderbilt. So if you take the electromagnetic response of any 3D insulator, the response to an external electromagnetic field will obviously be a Maxwell term with some renormalized coefficients. But in principle, you're also allowed to add this theta term, the E dot B term. And since E and B transform oppositely under time reversal, theta goes to minus theta under time reversal. And there is a periodicity of this theta term. Under shifts of theta going to theta plus 2 pi, you know, the partition function remains invariant if you put the system on a closed manifold. So only theta equals n pi is consistent with time reversal. So a well-known property of this theta term is that it's the derivative of a Chern-Simons term. And this derivative, this structure means that if you have a domain wall with a theta equals zero insulator, then right at the domain wall, you pick up the Chern-Simons term, and that leads to a surface quantum Hall effect of theta over 2 pi. Now, the conventional insulators have theta equals zero. Well, the free fermion topological insulator, it's well known that it has theta equals pi. And this indeed simply corresponds to the fact the surface Hall effect is shifted from an integer by half. Right? Now, we can give a physical interpretation of this periodicity. So when theta changes from theta to theta plus 2 pi, sigma xy at the surface changes by an integer. But this integer is not physically significant. It just means that we've deposited one layer of the 2D fermion integer quantum Hall state at the surface. So the important thing is the shift from an integer by a half. Right? So theta plus, going to theta plus 2 pi doesn't really give us a distinct surface state. OK. So now let me talk about bosons. So this is when the real talk begins. For bosons, we immediately see that theta equals 2 pi is distinct from theta equals 0. So if theta is 2 pi, and I have a system whose microscopic Hilbert space bosonic, then the surface Hall conductivity is theta over 2 pi, which is 1. But that's half of the allowed integer quantum Hall state in 2D. The boson integer quantum Hall state, I argued, has even integer Hall conductance. So this is 1. Right? So this cannot be obtained by depositing the 2D boson integer quantum Hall state, right? Which has sigma xy even. So the surface of theta equals 2 pi requires the 3D bulk, and the right periodicity for bosons is theta going to theta plus 4 pi. Because then I can get that the corresponding surface by depositing the 2D boson integer quantum Hall state. So later, we'll see that depending on how time reversal is realized, there are distinct boson topological insulators with theta equals 2 pi, or even with theta equals 0. There are topological insulators of bosons which have theta equals 0. Right? And there are topological insulators which have theta equals 2 pi. Okay, so the plan is the following. So first I'll talk about the surface theory. And the key idea here is going to be that there's a dual vortex description of the surface, but with an unusual vortex. And then I'll present an explicit construction of these 3D SPT faces by coupling together layers of known 2D faces. And finally, the thing that I personally am most excited about is this understanding that these boson topological insulators sort of give us a new window into much, much more exotic faces, for instance, gapless quantum spin liquids. So let me start with the surface theory. So the fermion topological insulator, the surface effective field theory, we can think about it as this famous odd number of Dirac cones plus whatever interactions we want to add. Right? So that's a legitimate effective field theory of the surface. What is the analog for bosons? Since this conference is full of experts and almost no non-experts, let me make a comment. These are people who understand all these symbols very well. So I'm going to focus in this talk on symmetry U1 cross time reversal, which is appropriate for spin systems with XY symmetry. It turns out this shows a wider range of phenomena than the other natural symmetry I could have considered, which is U1 semi-direct time reversal that's appropriate for bosons like helium-4 and so on. But this is easily understood in the same framework that I'm going to talk about for this, but it realizes only a subset of the phenomena this thing shows. I'll also briefly talk about another example where I don't have U1 symmetry, but only have time reversal. Perhaps we should call this a boson topological superconductor or superfluid, or whatever. Okay, so the key requirement of the surface theory is that there is no trivial Mott insulator. Right? Trivial symmetry preserving insulator, it's not allowed to be possible for the state to qualify as a topological insulator. So it's convenient to implement this requirement through a dual vortex point of view. So the idea is to describe the surface in terms of point vortices. So these are points where the vortex lines of the bulk penetrate the surface. Right? So my 3D system has a 2D boundary. And at the boundary, the 3D vortex lines will penetrate the boundary at some points. So the surface theory is obtained by focusing on these points of penetration and thinking about the resulting two-dimensional theory. So it's a little bit more introduction, unfortunately. So to describe 2D bosons, to describe this two-dimensional surface in terms of vortices, let's go back to ordinary 2D bosons and understand and remind ourselves of how we describe it in terms of vortices. So there's a famous charge vortex duality, the perpetrators of which some of them are at least in this room. And because of that, they'll probably give me extra time. So the structure of the theory is this, right? So there is a bosonic vortex field, phi, that's minimally coupled to a fluctuating U1 gauge field, and this gauge field is non-compact. And the meaning of this gauge field is that it's the flux of the gauge field is the physical boson current. And so it couples the external electromagnetic field, a probe external electromagnetic field this way, right? So within this picture, or within this dual theory, the boson superfluid is understood as the vortex insulator, and the boson Mott insulator is understood as the vortex condensate. Okay? So here's the meat, right? So we want to implement this requirement for the boson TI surface. There's no trivial Mott insulator. And we know that in 2D, we can think about Mott insulators as vortex condensates. So the way to not get a trivial insulator is to demand that there is no trivial vortex. Okay, so with time reversal, the natural way to implement this requirement is no trivial vortices, or to contemplate the possibility that perhaps the vortex is one of these three things. It can be a Cramer's doublet boson, or a fermion but a Cramer's singlet, or a fermion and a Cramer's doublet, and these three correspond to three distinct possible topological insulators. The first case, if the vortex can condense, it's a boson, but then it's a Cramer's doublet, so when it condenses, it'll break time reversal. Right? In the second two cases, the vortex is a fermion, and then it can't condense. So this way, you've created an obstruction to this vortex condensation route to getting a Mott insulator. Right? So the surface Landau-Ginzburg effective field theory will have the following structure. Let me just focus on examples 1 and 2 here. The number 3 is just a combination of these two, right? So let me just focus on 1 and 2. So in the first case, it's the same theory as in the standard dual description of a 2D boson, except that the vortex field is now a Cramer's doublet boson, right? And in the second case, the vortex field becomes a fermion, okay? So I could have talked about any one of these, but let me focus on this thing and discuss this a bit more. So I'm going to get a bit more insight in terms of a bulk ground state wave function. I'm going to go through this very quickly because I imagine Chen Kei Zhu Well, we'll probably talk about it. You might, I don't know, but. So let's think about what is it about the bulk ground state wave function of the 3D boson system that enables it to have this kind of surface vortex, right? So let's again take a dual view of bosons in terms of in three dimensions now, in terms of vortex loops. Now in the superfluid, the vortex loops have tension and hence are costly. And in the insulator, the vortex loops proliferate, they've lost their tension. So the conventional insulator, you can think of the ground state wave function as a vortex loop gas. And the vortices have condensed, they're floating all over the place. In a conventional insulator, this loop gas will have positive weights. Now in this topological insulator, where the vortex endpoint is a fermion, the right picture is that the vortex is a ribbon, and this ribbon loop gas has a phase factor -1 associated with each self-linking of the ribbon, which means self-linking is the number of times the two ends of a ribbon link with each other. Right? And this kind of thing can be derived from the bulk effective field theories that we wrote down, which I've not talked about, and I thought Cenk was going to discuss that from his title, but maybe not. So one can argue, by drawing some pictures, that with this ribbon structure and this phase factor of -1 associated with self-linking, that the endpoint of the vortex of the surface is naturally a fermion. Let me briefly mention a different physical picture for the other topological insulator where the surface vortex is a Kramer's doublet. So here the physical picture is very simple. The bulk ground state should be viewed as a soup of vortex loops where within the core of each vortex loop lives a Haldane spin chain. Right? So tell you the Haldane spin chain has no dramatic excitation. It only has gapped excitation. So the core looks featureless till you somehow cut it. If you cut the Haldane chain, so you cut the vortex loop and expose an open end of the vortex, then you expose a Kramer's doublet at the end. Right? So that's at least I find this physical picture very appealing. I think it gets the heart of the matter of what is it about the structure of the 3D bulk that enables the system to have all these properties. So let me go back to the particular topological insulator where the surface vortex is a fermion. Let's look, study the surface phase structure with this dual Landau-Ginzburg theory. So the vortex is gapped and in a trivial insulator, then from the usual rules of duality, that corresponds to a surface superfluid where you've spontaneously broken the global U1 symmetry. If on the other hand, the vortex is gapped, but you put it in a non-trivial insulator with some Chern number 1, then this gives you a T-broken surface with sigma xy equals 1, and turns out also with kappa xy equals 0. So this, in fact, is the exact correct T-broken surface state, which corresponds to bulk electromagnetic response with theta equals 2 pi. Right? Theta equals 2 pi, I argued, has surface sigma xy equals 1, and this indeed is 1/2 of the 2D boson integer quantum Hall state. So fermions can't condense, but pairs of fermions can condense, so we can get a Mott insulator by condensing pairs of paired fermionic vortices, form a Cooper pair out of these fermionic vortices and condense them. But that doesn't give, it gives you a Mott insulator which preserves all the symmetries, but this Mott insulator is not trivial. And the reason it's not trivial is an old story that goes back to the heydays of quantum spin liquids. So this paired vortex condensation produces for you a state which has Z2 topological order, known these days as the toric code. I wanted to call this the surface-surface code, but people discouraged me from saying that. So this has the usual topological quasi-particles, E, M, and epsilon. E and M, any two of these are mutual semions. You take one around the other, you get a phase of pi. E and M are bosons, and epsilon is you can think of any one of these as a bound state of the other two. Epsilon is the bound state of E and M. That's a fermion. Two mutual semions and they bind, you produce a fermion. Now through this paired vortex condensation with fermionic vortices, the state that you get has the charge, the global U1 charge is such that both E and M carry fractional charge of 1/2. So the surface in this case is in a symmetry preserving gapped quantum spin liquid phase. However, the symmetry is realized in a manner that's prohibited in strictly two-dimensional systems. So strictly two-dimensional Z2 topological ordered states can be described by mutual Chern-Simons theory. And it's easy enough, it's quite easy to show that this Todd assignment is inconsistent with time reversal. So I'm not going to give that argument here, but because I don't have time, but it's easy to see that. So the surface topological order of 3D SPTs is interesting. So the surface can have topological order even though the bulk doesn't, right? And the resulting state preserves all the symmetries, but it's still a gapped state. But the price you pay for having a gapped symmetry preserving surface is that it needs to have topological order, okay? Now it turns out that targeting such anomalous surface topological ordered states has been really fruitful in constructing from microscopically these boson topological insulators. I'll illustrate that in the next two slides with some of our work, and I think Jay Chen and perhaps Fiona Burnell will talk about that later. We'll talk about their work using, you know, doing this thing in later in this conference. So this issue has a crucial connection to questions of legitimate symmetry realization in 2D highly entangled states. For instance, you know, what kinds of Z2 quantum spin liquids with symmetry are legal in strictly 2D systems? You know, but when you're thinking about the Kagome antiferromagnet or something like that, right? Can you arbitrarily assign symmetries to the various quasi-particles? You know, so those kinds of questions. So thinking about what's allowed at the surface and what's not, you know, forces us to confront at the same time these kinds of questions. And indeed, it was my failed attempt to explain an experiment by my colleague Young Lee, which gave me impetus to pursue this line of thought. Okay, so now let me talk about an explicit construction of 3D boson SPT phases with the kind of surface state that I've talked about. So the strategy is going to be to stack together layers of two-dimensional Z2 topological ordered states with symmetry implementation that's allowed in strictly two-dimensional systems, right? So, induce a phase transition to confine all the bulk topological quasi-particles in such a way that we leave behind deconfined surface topological order. Right? And it turns out with this, we can engineer a surface topological order that's specific to an SPT surface. So let me illustrate this with one example. So let's put together layers of 2D Z2 topological order. So in each layer, I'll assume that the E particle has charge half and the M particle has charge zero. So this is more or less the standard topological order state with symmetry that many of us have been talking about and have constructed models of over the last 20 years. In the context of spin systems, we can think of it as saying that the electric charge is a spin on, has spin half, and the magnetic charge device on is spin zero and this time reversal invariant. Okay, so what we want to do is to condense this combination of quasi-particles, EI, MI plus one, EI plus two. Now, the interesting thing about this combination is that their self-statistics is clearly boson. Right? Each one of these particles individually is a boson, and they have no mutual winding. But their mutual statistics is also boson, because you take say this ellipse, and you look at its mutual statistics with this next ellipse, it's clearly a boson. They only share this E particle. You look at this ellipse, and you look at the mutual statistics with this ellipse, the M has mutual pi statistics with E, but the next E has mutual pi statistics with M, and so these two ellipses have mutual boson statistics. So this entire set of particles are all both self and mutual bosons, so I'm allowed to simultaneously condense all of them. So when I simultaneously condense all of them, it's easy to see that I'll confine all the bulk quasi-particles, the bulk topological quasi-particles. If I think about this E particle in the fourth layer, it's mutually non-local with respect to this thing that's condensed, and so that's gone. Likewise, the M particle is non-local with respect to this. It's non-local with respect to that, and so that's gone. and E and M are both gone, so epsilon is gone. Right? So in the bulk, everything is gone, and the bulk is a trivial state, or rather almost trivial state. It certainly has no deconfined quasi-particles. But let's look at the surface, for instance, the top surface. Now, the things shown in dotted ellipses escape confinement. So the E particle in the first layer, that's a mutual boson with respect to this thing that's condensed, and it doesn't see these other particles, right? So that escapes. And likewise, this combination, M1 times E2, so M1 is non-local with respect to E1, E2 is non-local with respect to M2, but this combination is local with respect to everything that's condensed, right? So both these two guys survive at the surface, but then E has charge half, and M1 times E2 also has charge half. So then we produced a time reversal symmetry preserving surface that has wrong symmetry assignment. Right? So this then is a construction of a 3D SPT phase by starting with some non-trivial, like Z2 to the infinity gauge theory in the bulk, and then confining all of them and leaving behind just the top and bottom layers. Yeah, you can do it with local interactions, yeah. But, you know, local interactions are in principle enough. Okay, very good. So it turns out this couple layer construction is very powerful and can be generalized to all the SPTs Ashwin and I talked about in our paper. And probably beyond, but we haven't thought about it. That's a very nice example of an application of this, which is a very simple construction of an SPT state, which is there with when the global symmetry is only time reversal. And this is a state that's beyond the cohomology classification that exists. And the idea, the way to get that state is to start with trivial realization of time reversal in each two-dimensional layer, and then condense the combination epsilon I, MI plus 1, epsilon I plus 2. So just replace all the E's by epsilons in the previous slide. So then what survives are epsilon 1 and M1 times epsilon 2, and they're both fermions. So you end up with an interesting surface state where all the topological quasi-particles are fermions. So let me briefly mention the state. I'm not going to discuss it in detail. So this beyond cohomology state was discussed somewhat tentatively by Ashwin and me first, but we were afraid because how could we say there's something beyond this famous paper? But by now it looks like it's actually there, and so the key question to ask is what the surface topological order is, and the surface topological order is this time reversal invariant all fermions, Z2 gauge theory, where all three topological quasi-particles are fermions. So in two dimensions, this kind of state is not possible in the presence of time reversal. It requires chiral central charge of 4 and so on. But at the surface of SPT, the construction that I showed you clearly allows it to exist. Right? It's interesting to talk about the T-broken confined surface. So the kappa xy for that surface is quantized to be plus minus 4, and the domain wall between the two different T-breaking sectors has the edge modes of this famous unpublished 2D E8 quantum Hall state. So this state, exists, and maybe sometime later this week we'll learn how to think about it within cohomology, or maybe something else is required. Okay, so let me very, very briefly then talk about a different characterization of the 3D boson TIs in the presence of global U1 symmetry. So let's now think about bulk external source of vortex lines. If you cut open a vortex in the bulk, change the Hilbert space to allow you to cut a vortex open in the bulk. So this will behave very similarly to the boundary vortex. And so it'll be a fermion or Kramer's doublet or both. So an alternate way of thinking about this is if we couple an external gauge field to the global U1 charge, then the magnetic monopole of this external probe U1 gauge field is precisely the source of the vortex line And so that guy also becomes a fermion, a Kramers doublet, or both. So I think Matthew is going to talk about this fermion, the fermionicity of the magnetic monopole, the theta equals 2 pi insulator. So very nice and but very different, actually not that different, very nice and different argument, I assume. A more formal way of saying this is from the point of view I've taken, is that there's a bulk edge correspondence, and the bulk monopole is created at the surface by the surface vortex of the dual Landau-Ginzburg theory. You're standing up?
Well, you have 5 minutes left for questions.
Okay, can I? Yeah, let me just flash 2 slides, and then I'll stop. All right. I want to flash these 2 slides because I'm, this is where my heart is. You know, the rest is where your heart is. So, and Matthew, you have to let me flash the slide. So my dear friend Matthew and my equally dear friends Lysik Motrinich and Jason Alicia, they had this beautiful idea some years back to construct a non-trivial gapless state of matter that's beyond long-range entangled, beyond quasi-particles, so on. And the idea was to say that suppose in some 2D boson or spin system, the vortex becomes a fermion, then we could proliferate this fermionic vortex and get an exotic vortex metal, you know, which is beyond even the slave particles. Right? It's beyond everything. You know, it's a very fascinating idea, very, very interesting. And they tried to apply this to quantum spin liquid theory on, say, the Kagome lattice, hoping that Herbert Smithite would realize this thing. But you know, 7-8 years later, we now realize that this, you know, this very provocative idea, unfortunately, doesn't quite work out. With time reversal, such a state we now see can only occur at the surface of the 3D topological insulator and cannot occur in strict 2D. It can occur, a gapless quantum vortex fluid can occur in 2D if you don't have time reversal invariance. For instance, if you kill supernaturally with the magnetic field in 2 dimensions. Last slide. So this understanding of 3D SPTs gives a new point of view on some familiar 3-dimensional quantum spin liquid states, the U1 quantum spin liquid in the presence of time reversal invariance. The standard view of such a state is that the excitations are propagating photon, and it's an electric particle, which can be a boson or fermion, or it can be a bosonic spinon or fermionic spinon, can be a Kramers singlet or doublet, can be a spinon or a triplon. You know, all these things have been discussed in literature. But the magnetic particle is a boson, typically, and has trivial internal quantum numbers. Now, let's, you know, think about this from after doing a duality. So then we switch these two, and the E particle is a boson with trivial quantum numbers, and the M particle is spin half or spin integer spin boson or fermion. From what we've learned so far about 3D SPTs, we see that this means the dual E particle is in a boson topological insulator phase. So instead of the standard view, we now have, you know, the possibility of an alternate view of the original gauge theory, that we can think about it as a monopole topological insulator, where the different monopole topological insulating phases, you know, instead of saying that these are the 4 possibilities, we can instead say that they are the same as 4 possible monopole insulators, 3 of which are topological insulators. Right? So this new point of view probably is useful for something. Anyway, so this is a summary. Just repeating what I've said through the talk. To me, the most important open question in the field really is, you know, that's again a personal take. You know, what kinds of real, by real I mean really real, not in a model but in a real system, what kinds of quantum magnets should experimentalists be pottering around with? Do they have any hopes of discovering this kind of state? Right? So let me stop there.